it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. Who on earth was complaining that there were no close games at this World Cup? For the second day in a row, we have been treated to an absolute classic. This one maybe even eclipsing that South Africa-Pakistan thriller. Australia-New Zealand putting up the highest ever aggregate in a World Cup match, with Australia winning in the final over. On the final ball, Australia defending 388 by just 5 runs. I'm joined by Jim Wallace to discuss that absolute thriller. Jim, let's start at the end, because it did basically have everything right. I mean, you had the hints of controversy, you had, you know, mishaps from both sides, and also just some really, really good cricket from both sides. And you had at the centre of it, Jimmy Neesham, who kind of always finds himself at the centre and just on the wrong ends of these all-time great moments.
Yeah, my heart went out to him. I thought he was going to do it and pull it off at the end. We were texting sort of and saying, is he going to do it? Is this going to be some sort of redemption, is an overused word in sport? But it felt like he might get them over the line. I was gutted. I mean, that last over had everything. So there was 5 wides. Just before that, I don't know if we're going to do a moment of the match, but the Labuschagne stepping on the boundary rope to Trent Bolt 6. There's a great line about Courtney Walsh batting, which I think is something like he used to bat like a blindfolded man hitting a wasp's nest. And Trent Bolt is a little bit similar to that. He hits the ball in weird areas. He doesn't look great, but he often comes up with a nuggety little score. And he smashed this ball and for 6. And then I was listening to the commentary and they were saying it's out. And then there was just a little bit of Labuschagne's heel on the boundary sponge. So some weird sort of universe glitch there, because obviously that was Bolt 4 years ago. Mm. So that was the moment I thought that New Zealand were going to get over the line. But poor old Neesham, yeah, at the end. I spoke to him just before the tournament started, and he was saying how, you know, his white ball stats are never going to be written on his tombstone. He's very much like a chilled out character when it comes to all this stuff, doesn't take it all too seriously. But I think that will hurt, you know, going through the first time he's batted in a World Cup match again, first bat out in the middle in a World Cup since Lord's 2019. And it goes right down to the wire, 2 balls to go, and he can't quite get England over the line, New Zealand over the line, sorry. So it was, it was an epic game, even tighter than the one yesterday, I think, with Pakistan and South Africa.
Yeah. And even just like, the echoes in the run out off the penultimate ball, like, you know, the throw's got to go to the keeper's end basically, and it does. And obviously it's Neesham run out this time rather than Gupta.
And that was an amazing bit of keeping, because that wasn't a great throw. Again, like how Butler's, he had a bit to do. I think Inglis actually had more to do off. Labuschagne, he took a few catches, but he had a bit of a shocker. He missed a run out as well, a couple of overs before the end, through to the wrong end. Oh, he absolutely wanged it at the stumps. Didn't give Stark chance to get back, or was it Hazelwood? I can't remember.
Well, there was one moment when, because actually, well, I mean, it was just so frantic those last few overs and those last few balls. But there were times when also Australia actually fielded brilliantly. And then there were also the mishaps, like there was one that Neesham absolutely crunches down the ground. And you're like, well, that's four straight off the bat. And Maxwell is placed really straight, sprints round and doesn't just dive to keep it in. He flicks it to the to the guy near him. That was brilliant. You had a brilliant save by, I think it was by Labuschagne out on the rope. But you also had the throw in that Mitchell Starc was not happy with, and you could hear him absolutely screaming into the stump microphone. And I guess that's the thing, is like you had bits of brilliance combined with bits of panic, I guess, from both sides, I suppose. I mean, Starc, renowned death bowler, but that is not an over he'll be hanging up in his Hall of Fame. You know, there was obviously the wides, there was the full toss, but even the other balls were they were slot balls, right? They weren't the Yorker balls, not, you know.
I couldn't believe that they went to him for the last, I guess they sort of have to, otherwise it's quite a big thing, but he's not bowled well all tournament. I think he's got 7 or 8 wickets, hasn't he, all tournament. He used to get a wicket maybe every 16 balls, 17 balls. Now I think his strike rate is way higher than that. He's not looked quite at it in this World Cup. And it's that five wides, I mean, that's like for a bowler of his quality and his experience in a last over to slam down five wides at the start of that over, that's a bit criminal, really. But yeah, he's not looked quite at it. But yeah, he definitely wasn't happy when Marnus absolutely pinged one in, and it could have been quite an easy run out if he'd just given himself another second or so. But there was so much. I mean, Maxwell dropped a sitter, a catch that, you know, you or I would take 100 out of 100. Well, I don't know. A caught and bowled, right? And then it didn't cost them too much. It was Ravindra at the end of that over. And Ravindra got out, I think, maybe in the next over, caught on the boundary. But, I mean, yeah, should we talk about him? You've got a stat. You said you were going to blow my mind with a Rachin stat.
Well, we should talk about him. I think we just need to cover off a couple things from the finish first, almost like admin-wise. Yeah. Firstly, there was a bit of questioning of Neesham's actual sort of game management in that situation, in terms of I don't think he turned down a single the whole time, I'm pretty sure, when he was batting with Henry and then with Bolt. Was that the right thing? Is it just one of those things that, you know, one day that'll come off and one day it won't? Or do you think maybe he could have faced a little bit more of the strike?
It's hard. I think he was lucky, actually, because he didn't run a single off, or he did run. He took a single, sorry, off the last ball, and then the first ball of the next over, Bolt smashed a six. You know, if Bolt blocks out three or four balls, then that decision is potentially, cost them the game. He was lucky that it didn't quite pan out like that, and also he got on strike pretty early in the last over too. I think it's hard, isn't it? Because you want to take all the runs, but then you also, Neesham's the guy that's going to win you that shot, win you that match with some big sixes. And he did. He pummeled some massive sixes. There was one over cover, there's been a lot of runs hit today, as you say. It was a record run scoring game. And I think even that boundary potentially was the highlight of them to keep. And it was an amazing 50 overs often gets a lot of stick because obviously there can be a lot of interminable overs. But when it gets like that and basically a team is chasing and they're in it and they're staying in the chase for maybe 35 overs needing 9-10 and over, and not to lose, every wicket is a huge moment. There's a real sense of jeopardy and drama, and it's sort of the whole, you know, well, all our early morning and then mid-morning and then into the afternoon is taken up following this thing, and it's sort of... it feels really satisfactory when it goes down to the wire. On the flip side of all the semi boring games we've sort of had so far, it feels like the World Cup is coming alive with some tight matches in the second half.
Yeah, and it's a good point actually, because I think one of the reasons why this game was better than yesterday's game on the whole is that yesterday's game, South Africa were kind of cruising it and then collapsed and it got close. It was crazy how neck and neck it was, just the comparisons all the way through. Like after 40 overs, the two teams had the exact same score, I think 292-5, and that was going on quite a lot. I mean, New Zealand, you know, obviously they lost, but batting wise, I don't think, you know, they couldn't have done much more. And let's talk about the man, Rachin. So this is the stat. Only two batters have made more than one men's World Cup 100 before turning 24. They are Rachin Ravindra and, can you name the other?
I mean, I'm not your guy for this. I'm going to say Sachin Tendulkar.
It is Sachin Tendulkar.
There we go.
Rachin, Sachin, and there's your Stachin.
there's your stat, Jim. Yeah. So the crowd were chanting Ratchin, Ratchin as well, weren't they? And I don't know if they've done that before, but they've obviously really taken him to their hearts. And maybe I've been living under a rock. Sometimes I do, but I didn't actually realise till I heard it on the radio when I was in the car that his name he's named after Ratchin. He's named after Sachin and Rahul Dravid. His name is a composite. Do you call it that? I don't know.
Portmanteau. Yeah.
Portmanteau, maybe. It's quite highbrow, isn't it? And I was thinking, you know, do you think there's anyone listening to this podcast who will be, you know, maybe they'll call their son or daughter after us too, Benajam or Jam Addict?
Yeah, maybe. It could be. Just Jen would be fine, wouldn't it? Anyone called Jen is named after us. But I guess, I mean, I think you might be the last person in the world to find that out. But I guess, you know, Ratchin's so good. Maybe Sachin was named after him. Who knows? I mean, but he was brilliant. And obviously, you know, the 100 against England was really, really good. I mean, the 100 against England was sensational. But this even eclipsed that because of, you know, the pressure of the chase. Because actually, there is a temptation when you're chasing 390-odd to go so hard from ball one. And he didn't do that. It was brilliantly paced, even though he was able to, you know, find the boundary when he needed to. He took his time to get set and then he was clicked up through the gears. It was probably smart, as well as the stroke play being, you know, incredible, wasn't it?
It was a really eye-catching innings. I always think he's got all the shots. He's sort of classical batsman who's able to turn it on under pressure. And he had a great start, and then he had a tricky innings against Bangladesh, where he was sort of on 30 and he got dropped on naught, and you were sort of thinking, oh, maybe he's tailing away. But then, you know, he came back in that game, and that's a lot of pressure against the old rival, the Battle of the Ditch. And there's a huge amount of pressure on, and he got out just at the wrong time. But you think if Ratchin bats for maybe four or five overs more, there's slightly less pressure on Neesham. There's slightly fewer runs needed towards the end. New Zealand were always just behind. A wicket fell just at the wrong time each time. It always felt like they were slightly always scrabbling. They were keeping in it really doggedly. I think on TMS, Dan Norcross described them as sort of like an annoying dog that wouldn't just sort of leave your side. It was always there as you looked round. But they were always just slightly behind. And I guess that's how it finished.
Mm. Well, I mean, that wasn't the only 100 of the day. And I guess Travis Head was exceptional, playing his first game of this World Cup, having, you know, and barely held a bat the past few weeks, having you know, broken his hand. To come in and play like that, with that freedom, obviously it was a brilliant partnership, but he especially is just some player. You know, Australia were already on course for the semi-finals before he comes in, and he takes their side up to the next level, doesn't he?
Yeah, scary. Him and Warner up the top. That's Warner's obviously in blistering form as well, and wants to make a statement, and he seems to really, really be enjoying his cricket and enjoying himself. And Head, you know, to come back in after not playing at all, after having a badly injured hand, and then doing that was, 100 off 70, not much more than 70 balls. Proper carnage. At one point, they were on for a really terrifying score. They were, 118 off 10, 190 off 18. And then they really tailed off. So you could see in those middle overs, I think they maybe got 90 off the next 10. And then at the end they came good, and Cummins came in and wielded the long handle and stuff. But yeah, Head is, I mean, he's a real dangerous player, and really good for Australia. I think that he's come in now and he's fresh, I guess, and he's obviously still in good form. And he just gives them that extra bit of firepower at the start, which makes them a dangerous proposition if it is them that takes that fourth semi-final spot. New Zealand are still above them, right, on net run rate, but it looks like those top four are starting to pull away a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about New Zealand and their semi-final chance in a second. I just wanted on Head, in terms of how Australia have actually fit him back into the side, do you think they've gone the right way on that? Because This is the way that I would have gone before it. So they've left out Green / Stoinis, I suppose, stuck with all the batters. But then when you look at what happened today, and you see Labuschagne making 18 off 26 coming in, you know, in the 30th over when you've got 230 on the board, that's feels like the risk of playing Labuschagne, I suppose. And then on the flip side, when you concede, you know, admittedly, they scored 390, but when you then concede nearly 390, you might think, are we a touch shy in the bowling department? You know, Marsh bowls 2 overs for 18.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone's getting smashed. So Wood, Stoinis and Green also get smashed, maybe. But I don't know. I don't know. I just wondered what you think, what you thought of the way they've gone with that.
It's hard, isn't it? I think I'm probably a bit torn and a bit biased. I was OBOing the match where Labuschagne got a really stodgy 30-odd off, maybe. I don't know. It felt like an eternity. But obviously, he was playing for net run rate. I think that, and again, today, he doesn't offer anything with the ball, really. They're not really going to chuck him the ball for some of his leg spin. So that is somewhere I think him and Smith may be a little bit too similar in that top order. And maybe if you go with a Marsh or a Green, then they do get, yeah, they give you some overs, or a Stoinis even, they give you some overs and they maybe offer something a little bit more dynamic than a sort of nudger and a nerdler that Labuschagne is. They give you the ability to clear the boundary from ball one, whereas Marnus always feels like he's going to use up 10 or 15 balls just to get his eye in. But then, you know, he's probably quite hard to drop. He's quite a sort of Liverpool puppy, isn't he? So, yeah. But it's good for Australia that they've got that depth now, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to see them to be slightly more just flexible with it. Like, I don't think Labuschagne needed to come in when he did. Him and Smith, to a lesser extent, can be kind of like collapse insurance. If, you know, those guys go hard and fall, then actually you're quite like Labuschagne coming in and knocking it around number five. But when you're 230 for three with 20 overs to bat, sticking, you know, Glenn Maxwell, who's got 220 hundreds opening the batting. But yeah, as you say, good problem to have. New Zealand, you know, still well on track for the semi-finals, but their next game is against South Africa, who have looked brilliant this tournament. Then their next game after that is against Pakistan. And if Pakistan win all their games, they'll be on 5 wins. If New Zealand lose those two, the most they can get up to is 5 wins. It's not panic stations at all, but, and you know, they have been very good this tournament, but there is still, I guess if anyone's going to slip out of that top four, it now seems like they're the most likely, I'd say.
Yeah. I was listening to Jeff Lemon earlier, and he was saying that everyone was sort of tongue in cheek, but he was saying everyone was raving about New Zealand, but really, they pulled off a really good win in the opening match, but then they've pretty much had the easiest run of everyone with Bangladesh, Afghanistan, and Netherlands, and you know, you have to still beat the teams in front of you, but now they've got their proper hard matches to come. They've lost to India, they've lost to Australia. It does sort of get a bit more nervy to them towards the end, but I think they've got. I mean, for them to go so close today, they could have easily capitulated and, you know, fallen by 100 runs, 150 runs. For them to get so close today, chasing down that score, I think they've got real strength in depth. One thing we should talk about, actually, is did you see Kane Williamson run out with a pair of gloves and the high vis on towards the end to give Nisham a message? So, he's around. Obviously, he's out at the minute. They're hoping he'll come back in. I think they're confident he'll come back in towards the end of the group stage. But they're a very tight-knit group. He was coming out to say a few words, maybe to just say to Nisham, you know, turn down the odd single, mate, and smash a six or so. But I think I'm pretty confident that New Zealand will make that four.
Yeah, I guess that there's, I mean, it's just similar to the last World Cup, isn't it, where they got through with 5 wins again and a washout, and the 5 teams they beat were the teams below them. So South Africa, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Afghanistan and West Indies, that was their 5 wins. They lost against Pakistan and against the teams above them, apart from a washout against India. But that can be enough at a World Cup. And they look like doing the same again. And I guess also, when it comes down to net run rate, their net run rate is, at the moment, significantly better than Pakistan. So actually, it could be a very similar situation to last time, where it's 5 wins, plays 5 wins, but it's net run rate again for New Zealand. We shall see.
And also, the interesting thing about New Zealand is, if they do get through and they look good for it, you know, and then it's anyone's game, really. You know, it is remarkable that for a tiny country, not a lot of cricket funding, especially compared to the big three, that, you know, they made 2 finals and hopefully going to make the semi-finals. It's they're a real like celebration of one day cricket, and that squad is still going on, unlike England, whose 2009 squad has tailed off and now fallen away, which can happen. that New Zealand core squad. They've had a few people retire, like Ross Taylor and people like that. But that main core, they've brought in some new people like Ravindra, who are doing well. And some of the older guys are sticking around, like your Williamsons. And Southie's still around the group. He's probably not going to play, but he's there as a sort of, again, like Obi-Wan figure.
Also just new guys who aren't actually young, like Mitchell Conway didn't play the last World Cup. They're not young, but they're a world-class bat at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Conway is still, you know, he always looks good. He always looks dangerous. Phillips as well. He's not really fired that much with the bat, apart from in one of the earlier games, he got sort of 70 or so. But yeah, I mean, they've got strength in depth as well. So I think, yeah, they're a good. I mean, they're my bet for the tournament. They always have been. But I'm standing by them, even though they went down today at the end.
Cool. Well, next up, before we return to Jim for a preview of tomorrow's India-England clash, let's head over to Abhishek Mukherjee to discuss Netherlands' game against Bangladesh.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hi, Abhishek. It looked for a moment as if we might get a third thriller in three games. We didn't quite, but only because Netherlands were just quite a bit too good for Bangladesh. It's not new to say, but they've been one of the highlights of this World Cup, haven't they?
They are a very unusual side. For example, they bat deeper than most sides. And there have been matches where you almost feel like they have the batting lineup at least the top eight or nine upside down. But because they lose a few wickets and then number six, number seven, number eight and number nine come out and contribute. They are an unusual side in many aspects. The other bit is so many of them bowl. So if one person does not perform, someone else covers up.
Yeah, you're right to talk about the lower order. I mean, that was what it was today. Scott Edwards has played a few of those innings in the tournament. I think they really like Scott Edwards against spin. I think people are suggesting he should go up the order, and I think that's why they're not doing that. But I think you're right that it speaks to their resilience as well, not just, you know, they never know when they're beaten. And when you think that their last game, they were, you know, thrashed by Australia, weren't they? It was the biggest margin in World Cup history. I guess they must have known they'd be on the wrong end of a few games coming into this tournament. But when you have to, you know, fight for every chance like Netherlands do, I guess you learn to develop some resilience. But there's also loads of skill there as well. I mean, Paul van Meekeren today was outstanding. He took four wickets and he contributed your moment of the day, didn't he?
Yes, definitely. That ball to get Mushfiqur Rahim, and Mushfiqur is a top player. So to get him, I mean, he had no clue what that ball did. To look at his reaction after the decision, you'll realize. I mean, it was one of the best balls of this World Cup. And regarding their batting, it's a wonder how they did so well, because of course, they have their own bowlers, but they did not have net bowlers when they arrived in India. So they put out advertisements and they hired local net bowlers, one of them a food delivery agent, another an officer who worked at a court, and so on. They hired a group of local amateur cricketers as net bowlers. And that is some of the practice their batters have been getting at this World Cup. It's incredible what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're pretty much the only side not to be playing an ODI series of some sort in the build-up to the World Cup. And they were actually asking if anyone would play against them, and they couldn't find anyone. But they've still done, I mean, they've done okay. Maybe they would have done better if they had them, who knows? But they've still done well. Yeah, I mean, that ball was just amazing. The fast cutter. It actually reminded me a lot of the Bumrah ball, I think, to Rizwan in the India-Pakistan game. You know, these are two of the lower-ranked sides in the competition. Bangladesh now not officially out, but almost out of contention. I think four wins, even if they win the next three, you're very unlikely to go through with four wins. But Netherlands, look, it's still a long shot, but we were talking earlier in the podcast with Jim Wallace about how New Zealand could get pegged back to maybe five wins overall with their tough run of games. And then you might have a team on five wins going through. Netherlands' next two games are against Afghanistan and England. You'd say that they would have looked ahead of the tournament at that Afghanistan game and thought that could be one we can win. And you'd think they might look at England now and think that's one we might be able to win as well. And then if that happens, then they go into their last group game against India. Fair enough. But still, they go into that, maybe, who knows, with a chance at the top four, which look, all of that is unlikely to all go their way. But the fact we're even talking about it is kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, 6 matches into the tournament, they are still alive. They're above 2 full members. And they are going to play one of them in the next 3 matches. And Afghanistan is someone they should fancy beating. I mean, Netherlands should back themselves against both Afghanistan and England. Against India, it probably won't be as easy, but it probably looks improbable against India. But yeah, I mean, if they go into the last match with their semi-final hopes alive, I think that will be a major achievement.
Obviously, England have been the story of the tournament from a bad point of view, but Bangladesh have also been pretty rubbish, right? I mean, England beat them, so they have to have been pretty bad. And then when you think that in this game and against South Africa as well, they've been out of the contest so far out from the end of the game to the point where they're like they weren't trying to win either of those for the last like 5 or 10 overs. They came into this tournament, you know, with a decent record over the last few years, you know, talking about subcontinent conditions. Their good spin attack. They had built some quicks, and it's kind of all gone wrong. They're kind of scrapping for the wooden spoon now. Like, what has gone wrong for them, considering, you know, how they were being talked about when the tournament began?
Almost everything except Mahmudullah. I don't think anyone averages 35 for the back in this World Cup, and I don't think anyone who has bowled 20 overs averaged under 30 with the ball. So they have failed on both counts. And they had the attack. I believe they had the attack to do well, bowling attack to do well in these conditions. But I don't know. There have been matches where they were in a position against South Africa. They just had no clue how to stop them in the slog over. Shakib, I think, admitted to that in the post-match press conference. Against India, they started off really well, and then they did not try to take the advantage. I mentioned Mahmudullah, but Mahmudullah's one major innings came in a situation where the match was virtually over. So there has been no major batter or bowler for Bangladesh who actually stood up in this World Cup.
Yeah, and I guess you think back to their build-up, how dominated that was by the infighting between...
Yeah,
you know,
between 2016 and 2023, I don't think they lost a single bilateral series at home. And conditions are not exactly the same as India, but they are Bangladesh is probably the closest in terms of conditions of all the other things. You might not have expected to do them really well, but you expected them to do better than this.
Yeah, and you wonder how much the stuff in the build up between Shakib and Tammy McBall and that whole furore. Maybe it's too much to say that has affected them that much, because you know at the end of the day, you go out on the field, you bowl your balls, you face your balls. Does it really matter what infighting's happened before it? But I guess it kind of helped, I suppose. Well, now it's back to Jim, and we'll be previewing tomorrow's England-India clash. Jim, India play England tomorrow. Doesn't get any easier for England, you know, 1 win from 5 against, you know, the form team, the best team in the competition, the hosts. I almost think the worst thing for England is that even if they lose tomorrow, they still won't be officially knocked out, which just seems cruel.
I saw you posted this yesterday, and I was doing the OBO of the Pakistan-South Africa match, and I put it in there. I don't know if you saw, but I was like, if one thing is giving me heavy boots at the minute, it is this. And it's basically the fact that England aren't officially out, but they've got to sort of flog their corpse around India for the next few weeks with some mathematical chance, if the stars align and Jupiter ascends and, I don't know, you regrow your moustache, like they'll end up going through by some quirk of the numbers. But I couldn't even bring myself to click on it. I saw the headline, and you've obviously worked it out, but is it like a ridiculous, something really ridiculous has to happen?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there need to be quite a few upsets and that sort of thing. Because obviously they can only go up to four wins if that happens, shouldn't be enough to go. You shouldn't be able to go through a World Cup group stage.
Are you telling me that even if they lose tomorrow, they're not mathematically out?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's something wrong there on some level, right?
Yeah. I mean, someone on Twitter, I think his name's Ian, and I think his handle is Huawei the Lads, which I enjoyed. But he described their campaign as like an unflushable turd.
how much sadder can Joss Butler's eyes get? You can't. He can't have any more sadness in his eyes. So you know, I feel for them. You know, it's hard once you've gone out in all but numbers and you've got to play those remaining games against some really good sides. You know, heads of down. It's just been a bit of a shocker. You know, they announced their central contracts in the middle of the tour, and David Willey doesn't get one, and he's on Twitter liking posts that are saying how hard Dumbuy is. It feels a bit wheels coming off, doesn't it? Good luck to them tomorrow against India. I mean, it's going to be tough, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you wanted to supply any positivity to England fans, but I think you've killed that off completely.
I think the most positive thing would just be get this done, get properly out, and then you can reset. And you know, there's a white ball tour of the Caribbean in like 8 days' time, so you know, get up for that. Whereas at the minute, it feels a little bit like you're flogging a dead horse. But good luck to them.
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, at the moment, people are saying, you know, everyone's got to go, sack them all, drop them all, start completely afresh. And maybe some of them wouldn't mind that too much quietly. But if you are, say, a Johnny Bairstow or a Ben Stokes, even, like, if you want to be part of that rebuild, you've kind of got, what, four more games in which to show why, basically. And so that starts tomorrow, I guess.
The other confused thing was the dropping of Harry Brook. Like, he's the future of white ball cricket in England. To drop him for that crucial game and then they go down and the batting's really limp, that just smacks of really muddled thinking, I think, for me, because surely these guys like Brook and Atkinson, they are the future. So you'd hope that in the next few games they're given a proper go, and you know that they're, because otherwise that's really damaging for them. If they are suddenly dropped for the rest of the tournament, then you know they carry that baggage around with them for the next few years. So you'd like to think that, yeah, I think positively for England, if they play these games, they play some of those more youthful players, and they put up a good fist of it. Like today, New Zealand went down, but you know, you can go down in a good fashion and make a fight of it. I think that's probably what England fans just want to see. They want to see some better cricket, maybe the odd smile on the face, and you know, give them a bit of something to cling to, a mass to cling to in the final few weeks, rather than, I don't know, if they get bowled out for another 120 or whatever, it's just like, wow, these 2 weeks are going to feel like 2 million years.
There you go. There's the pep talk, England. Just try not to get beaten by too much tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
I mean, that's a metaphor for life, isn't it? Just get through. Just try and not get beaten down too much. Just, you know. Yeah. And then, try and smile through it.
I think they'll do their best. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. We will be back tomorrow after that India-England game when Yaz will be back in the hosting chair. Thanks a lot for listening. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.